Three, two, one.
Here we go! Hello! Welcome, everyone, to episode 126 of the No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive on October 21st, 2021. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust to celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. We've got a different crew than usual today. I'm your co-host, Stephanie Weirwill, SVP of Integrated Marketing at Revive. Our show co-hosts, Chris and Chase, are out this week, but I'm joined by some very special guests, Gail Pryor, VP of Content Strategy, and Brennan Mason, VP of Strategy, who are fresh off the health conference in Boston and ready to share with us everything they learned about what the future of healthcare and health brands look like. Hey, Gail, how's it going?
Hey, Stephanie, going well, thanks.
Awesome. Very excited for you to be here and share all of your knowledge. Brennan, hi.
Hey, hello, friends.
Hello. I'll give a quick intro for those who don't know Gail and Brennan. So Gail has been on the show before. You may remember her. She's a lead for our content team, and she's an award-winning writer with over 20 years of experience in creating content for healthcare. And before her time at Revive, she served as a senior editor for Athena Insight, which is the digital magazine sponsored by Athena Health. She's led content strategy for Atheon. She has worked in and with healthcare organizations that range from everyone from Harvard Medical School to Boston Children's Hospital and beyond. And then Brennan is a healthcare growth expert and tech enthusiast and policy journeyman. Just love that word. At Revive, he builds scalable and measurable marketing programs for leading health systems and healthcare vendors. And prior to Revive, he was the chief marketing officer for healthcare interoperability company Bridge Connector. And a fun fact, he's also a 12-year veteran of the U.S. Army and Army Reserve. So with this awesome and exciting crew, again, Gail and Brennan are joining us after a very busy week at Health. They'll share these hot off the press insights that were shared at the conference in Boston over the last couple of days. So let's get into it. First up, just in case anyone out there is not aware of health, tell me, what is health?
Well, you know, it's the purpose of health, I think it's its fourth year now, is to bring everybody in the healthcare ecosystem together to reimagine healthcare delivery. And I think, you know, 4 years into it and with everything that's happened in the last year, the one thing we can say is the ecosystem has more players than ever.
Yeah. And if you're in healthcare technology, you're probably familiar with HIMSS. I think of health as the anti-HIMSS conference.
I like that description. And so you mentioned, you know, it brings everybody together. So who are some of the brands, the speakers, the vendors, people represented at Health?
Well, gee, you know, it was Amazon, AARP, Fidelity, AHA, American Hospital Association, IBM Watson, Maven, Philips, you know, some familiar names, Teladoc, and some increasingly familiar names in this space, Verizon, CVS, Walmart, Zoom was there. All the major payers were there, Optum, Oak, Cigna, Aetna, Humana, the Blues. But it was really a mix. You know, what would you say, Brennan, about like, who surprised you there?
I was surprised by who wasn't there. I guess not particularly surprised, but Epic's not there. Some of the other very, very large provider-focused technology solutions were not there, or if they were there, had very, very small presences. So it really was a big presence of big tech, retailers, but also a whole lot of upstarts and startups, and of course, all the investors there who were trying to have conversations with these startups. A really nice mix, both up and down market, except for the people at the tippity top.
Yeah, I personally love health. I've been before, and it is just a potpourri of everyone who is leading the way in health. And I think, Gail, you said a couple of days ago, everyone who thinks they're leading the way in health. It is very much the new guard, not the old guard, the really the ones that are thinking about a vision, a big vision for the future, whether or not that vision can actually happen. It's a place where those conversations take place. So speaking of health in the past, just a quick question before we dig into all of our awesome learnings. Gail and Brennan, you both were at Health in the Future prior to the pandemic. What was it like being there this time after all that we've experienced in the last couple of years and being in person?
You know, it was a little weird at first to be indoors with 6,000 people, but that passed pretty quickly because everybody had to prove vaccination status and everybody had to have been tested in the last 72 hours. And including if you hadn't been tested, you could get tested right there in the lobby of the conference center. So it was really interesting because now COVID testing has joined metal detectors in the lobbies of these big events.
Yeah, I think honestly, it was a great model for how to have a large event at this point of where we are in COVID. And I say it with a very large caveat that I am in no way a medical risk assessment expert, but just from some conversations I was having with actual practicing physicians there, there seemed to be great positive feedback about the policies they had in place, but also the execution. They used CLEAR. CLEAR, if you may be familiar with, as something to help you get faster through airport security. They also have a Health Pass app where, you know, Health the conference basically set up the parameters that you had to meet to get your Health Pass. And once you got your Health Pass, you were checked right in. Yeah, but if you didn't have some of the things on your Health Pass, like Gail was saying, you could get a test on site. You get a test on site every day if you wanted to. There was no limit to it. I think it was really well planned and also well executed.
Oh, sorry about that. And if you're comparing it to previous healths post-pandemic, there was absolutely a difference here in that it felt a little humbler. It wasn't the Las Vegas spectacular, which seems right for where we are, as we emerge from the pandemic. It was also in Boston, and Boston is not Las Vegas. There was one, all the signs had a tagline that said Boston baby. And I was like, really? Like Vegas baby? I don't think so. We're in Boston. I say that as a Bostonian who loves her city. So it was a different feel. You know, we had puppies, not big, big name stars and things like that. There were puppies to pet at Health this year, which seemed appropriate.
Well, that's very fun. And it sounds like it's setting a standard for events in the future, like concerts and sports events, which several are using CLEAR, several are, having the vaccine mandate, but I haven't heard of COVID testing on the spot. And I imagine there's a lot of pressure for sure when you have a healthcare event with that many healthcare professionals in one place to really lead the way. So speaking of lead the way, let's get into the good stuff. Let's talk about where you all see the industry heading. Again, health is just a wonderful way to get a crystal ball into the future of healthcare. So I'll toss this up. Brennan, if you first want to kick us off with a few overall themes that you saw, and then we can dig into a few of those, whatever we have time for.
Sure. There was one, you couldn't turn around without meeting someone talking about the reinvention or the rethinking of primary care, both in how primary care is delivered and how primary care fits in with all the other pieces of care. It was really interesting because not everyone has the same vision of what the future of primary care is. There's a lot of different opinions, but everyone seems to agree that it's going to be different in the future and that it's becoming different than what it is now. So that was really interesting to hear about. And, digital health, that's one that was, ever present at Health. But it was a little bit of a different feel around some of the digital health. It almost felt like some of the digital health innovators were almost trying to force digital on everyone, where some had the perspective to step back and say, okay, digital is a channel, and it's a channel that we can use to better engage the consumer and the patient. It's not something we need to force on the patient. And lastly, one that I think was really, really interesting to see, and this is something that's been building for a while, was the role that employers are taking in delivering healthcare, and also the role that employers are taking as buyers of digital health and other types of health solutions.
Those are three really interesting topics. And let's get into all of those three. Maybe we can start with primary care. So just a question is, you know, who is reinventing primary care? Is it the health systems? Is it the hospitals? Is it the Amazons of the world that we've been hearing about for years? Gail, talk to us a little bit about where that's headed.
Yeah, well, the answer is all of the above. Everybody is focused on health, on primary care right now, whether it's the retailers, you know, Walmart, we've all been watching Walmart's primary care clinics. CVS has certainly, you know, had the MinuteClinics. Amazon, one of the big announcements, there weren't a lot of big announcements, but one of them was that Amazon is taking its virtual hybrid primary care service beyond its own employees, and it's offering it to other employers as the covered benefit in selected cities. United Health is rolling out a virtual first primary product called Navigate Now. That has some interesting aspects to it. So everybody is thinking really, really hard about primary care. And then of course there's that whole raft of Medicare Advantage and also, you know, coming in, you know, ChenMed and Devoted. And then there's Iora, which was Medicare Advantage, is now combining forces with One Medical. So it's a very crowded space. And it's a strangely heated space. You know, we saw this a year or so ago in at the last health, when there was, you know, the whole conference was talking about the conflict on in a panel between Farzad Masashari of Aledad and Rishika Fernandopoule of Iora, where they were really going at each other about risk-based primary care. And this year we also had a clash about primary care on a panel between entrepreneur Adrian Aoun, who's the founder of Forward, and again with Rashika from Iora and One Medical. But this was about the role of tech in primary care. Forward is a subscription model of a digital primary care. It doesn't use insurance, but it costs about $150 a month. And their idea is that with all the right technology, we shouldn't need insurance, right? We should be able to use primary care to meet people where they are, provide all the convenience that people want, and take care of the whole person. And very, very dismissive to Aoun was to anybody else who was exploring any other model of primary care. Particularly even the entrance of the pharmacy retailers, you know, the CVS and Walgreens, who are also looking for a model for primary care. He said, like getting your care at Walgreens is like wanting an iPhone and being sold a Motorola, he said. Walgreens isn't sitting there building the best product. And another panelist said, well, how do you know? And he said, come on, it's Walgreens, right? So there is this competing philosophies about, A, what do we need to do to reinvent primary care? And then there are these kind of these attitudes about, you know, the incomers and the legacy systems and who can truly offer a really fresh new consumer experience, and who really understands, this is the key part, the complexities of healthcare. So like Rashika's response was, you know, we believe you need to have humility to deliver healthcare because healthcare is unbelievably complicated. And so the whole conversation, the fact that this kinder, gentler area of healthcare we call primary care is the one that's attracting these kind of heated discussions is really interesting. And I think it's because a lot of the core themes that we're dealing with in healthcare transformation are coming together in primary care. This is where it really matters a lot. This is where we're going to actually find the solutions that we can scale in a lot of different directions or not. So this is the place, primary care, where those of us who are watching healthcare transformation take place should be keeping our eyes on.
Yeah, and Adrian, when he said that, he made himself seem very uneducated, because you can talk about how you believe, you know, insurance doesn't have a place in our healthcare system, and that's a valid opinion, but you have to understand what the function of insurance is, and it's to carry risk. Somebody has to carry risk. So the insurance company can pass on risk to the health systems, employers can carry risk, or the patient themselves will carry risk if they're uninsured or underinsured, or if you just have a very high deductible. And for him, it was just insurance companies, bad insurance companies. If you work with insurance companies, you're awful. Complete lack of understanding, at least the way he presented himself, to the concept of risk and how risk-based primary care can work and how important it is to understand risk, which was just really, really surprising to hear from someone who is making very bold claims that they have it all figured out.
Yeah, exactly. And he kind of touched on what was also a central divide that Brennan and I noticed across all these conversations, which is, is the consumer experience the most important thing, or are outcomes the most important thing? Are they the same? Where do they diverge? You know, as Rashika said, finally, at the end of this heated panel, healthcare is very complex. We need to rethink it from the ground up. But if we're not improving people's health, it's just a shell game. So yes, we can provide these great consumer experiences, but if they're not actually going to improve people's health, we're not actually transforming healthcare.
Well, the complexity conversation is a really important one, because we've seen, of course, entrants come into the space, think they can solve it all, and then exit and realize it's very, very complex and more challenging to change. So I'm curious, having been there for the last several days, especially around the primary care conversation, that discussion has been happening for several years. Do you think that is now the time when disruption is happening? Is it already happening? Is it about to happen? If you were to place bets, what would you say where we are seeing or about to see?
Well, I think your use of the word space is key here, because where disruption seems to be happening is with the entrance of all these new players, whether it's Walgreens and CVS and Walmart, or it's the digital solutions that payers are incorporating into benefits, or that employers are incorporating into benefits. There's this aggregation of tools and efforts that is beginning to create a new space in care delivery that is upstream from what we think of as traditional care delivery spaces. There is a lot that is happening between the payers and the plans and the employers and all these different tools that is kind of merging at this point. What used to be kind of just wellness, you'd get an app from available through your employer that you could use for your general wellness, and that's still a very big space. That's beginning to merge into primary care access via some of the retailers and things like that. So it's still very hard to see exactly how this is happening, where it's happening, where it's going. But that's where the activity is. The where employees and people who are getting either wellness or primary care access through new channels. It's all whatever's happening there. It's way ahead of the traditional access points of traditional primary care and traditional health systems.
And something that was really eye-opening for me is really listening in detail about some of the large retailers and some of the inherent advantages they have to dominate this space. I think everyone was pretty familiar with, okay, they have a lot of locations, it's convenient. But hearing specifically, for example, someone at Walmart Health talk about how well-structured they are for value-based care. You can have a telehealth appointment with a provider and understand that you don't have access to healthy food, and 2 hours later, you can have a shipment of groceries from Walmart at your door. There's a logistical network and a longitudinal understanding of the patient that someone like Walmart has innately, they've had for years, that a health system or a digital-only solution to try and build out something the scale of Walmart is, borderline unfathomable. that makes them very, very well structured to succeed. So to me, it's past just, well, we have a lot of sites and it's very convenient. There's a lot of really, really interesting baked in advantages that a group like Walmart would have to start to dominate and really take over primary care.
That's so fascinating because it feels like for a couple of years now, but especially now, the healthcare industry is opening up to realizing, yes, you know, maybe the traditional players have the clinical expertise, the operational setup, but what some of these large non-healthcare players have is really invaluable, the audience, the national scale, all the things that you mentioned. And that's where it's becoming really interesting of depositioning the traditional players, especially the hospitals and health systems, and having this broad focus on health of all kinds, wellness, up funnel health, not to mention the digital functionality and audiences that they've built. So speaking of digital health is really the purpose of health, right? So you all mentioned that a little bit earlier, but talk to us a little bit about what was happening this year in digital health and what you see those changes being.
What we thought was interesting was the evolution between single point solutions in digital health and the digital health solutions that are beginning to sort of integrate across the continuum of care. Still an awful lot of single point solutions, but beginning, at least in the panels, more and more discussion about how valuable are these solutions if they don't integrate with the rest of the continuum of care.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, both at Health and at HIMSS, I think one of the key buzzwords has been interoperability, and it's something that has almost been beaten to death. And there's a lot of progress, I believe, and of course, I'm saying this biased because I'm someone who comes from the interoperability integration world, but it's one of the largest barriers to making all of these innovations a reality together is making them all work together very nicely. Because as a siloed solution, it's not particularly valuable. It just becomes another thing for another person to have to log into or manage. So making everything work together is very, very, very hard. It's not necessarily as hard as it used to be. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of times it's not necessarily a technical challenge in making things work together, although sometimes it's a very real, very hard to solve challenge. Oftentimes it is a little bit more of a political challenge and trying to get data into a very large legacy acute EHR solution that doesn't want data from a potentially competing solution inside of it, which is not great for innovation. It's not great for the patient. Really the only person who benefits there is the legacy solution. But I think that's just a reality. And again, it's not as much a reality. You know, ONC has passed some regulations. We'll see how much teeth these regulations actually have. And so I believe everyone is kind of slowly but surely being forced to play nice in the sandbox together. I think there's a lot of technical solutions out there that can help solve this. And like Dale was saying earlier, I think one of the key differences this year is that everyone is talking about how to work together. Everyone's talking about, for the most part, being a piece of a larger solution and not talking about how they're going to completely take over and change healthcare.
Yeah. But they're beginning to run into one of the realities of integrating all the way across the continuum, which may, you know, we can probably, you know, eventually all fix these integration issues. But when you begin with wellness and you work your way up through primary care and then you get to you know, all the way, you know, making sure that the consumer experience is seamless and what consumers want, then you get to clinical care delivery. And the parameters change, and it's going to be interesting to see how these digital health innovators and companies deal with that change. And the change is that when you, to be adopted in the clinical space, you have to ask different questions. It's no longer, you know, what is the NPS score? Do consumers like it? Is it easy to use? It's what are the outcomes? Can you show us that, you know, adding this tool to the life of a patient with diabetes is going to improve their diabetes? And that's where that's where a lot of these innovations are either going to hit a wall or become adopted and become part of how we deliver healthcare.
Yeah, you know, you've been talking about collaboration, which absolutely is a really critical theme in the recent past and as we move forward. Are there some things that you would, having now seen these conversations, heard these conversations for the last few days, that you would encourage health brands to be doing regarding collaborating with others or regarding who to be looking at to collaborate with?
Yeah, I think that the legacy healthcare, the care delivery organizations should be taking a look at Mayo, because Mayo was one of the very few health systems that was present there with CEO Gianrico Ferrugia on the main stage. And he said a lot about how the pandemic accelerated innovation in healthcare and the work that Mayo is doing to aggregate patient data, as Brennan was talking about, to make sure that data is shared. But two points he made really stood out. One was that for healthcare to transform, healthcare delivery organizations need to take the lead, which at the moment they're not. And two, that to lead, healthcare delivery organizations need to change their business model from a pipeline to a platform so that they can integrate both, you know, the technology, but also these approaches so they can take down that wall between that's now there between all this innovation and then the hospitals and the health systems. So he's thinking about the integration problem and how every good digital health innovation, every new care delivery model eventually needs to connect across that full continuum of care from wellness to clinical care. And that means changing the fundamental business model from feeding patients in to a platform where all these different players can connect to your health system.
Dale, what does that mean? Just quickly for those, I love that phrase, from a pipeline to a platform, you know, from feeding into this platform. What does that mean? Tell us more. What does that mean to you?
That means that a health system, which is really where, you know, health may happen outside our health systems, but our health systems are our experts in making people better. Even though we call it a sickness system when it should be a wellness system, to turn a sickness system into a wellness system, we need to make these connections so that digital tools need to be able to connect into health systems. Health system providers in those health systems need to be able to use these digital tools, need to be able to prescribe them. This patient needs this app, just as they prescribe a medication. So we need to overcome the technical barriers, but we need to overcome the philosophical barriers as well. So a platform, if a health system were a platform, that means any of these good ideas with the right outcomes data, with all safety measures in place, should be able to connect to a health system and should be able to be part of the care that the providers in that health system provide to patients anywhere, wherever they are.
Great. That's helpful. Brennan, I jumped on top of you. What were you wanting to jump in and say?
No, I think there's to add a couple things here. First, to take the cynical road on this. I totally agree. I want my healthcare providers to be the ones who are having the conversations about health and talking about health. And to illustrate how far we've veered from that, I saw a couple of pieces of branding that said, maybe health plans are the heroes we need. Like really, we're calling the health plans heroes now, and the health systems are just absent. Wow. And I agree with everything that Gail and the Mayo Clinic are saying, but it's not gonna happen if the financial incentives aren't there. And if you're still working and trying to work in a pure fee-for-service model, you're not gonna be a health brand. You're not. It's not gonna work because you are not incentivized to be a health brand. And that might sound cynical, but I think we've just seen that to be absolutely true. The innovators now are the ones who carry risk. We saw that clearly in health. The innovators are the employers. The innovators right now are the health plans and the people who are trying to sell to those in that space. So I think if you're not taking on risk and you're not trying to be a health and wellness brand, it's just going to be very, very challenging for you to do that. It's really disappointing to only see a couple of sessions run by health systems. The only one I went to was run by health system was about ED innovation. So even that one wasn't even talking about health. It was talking about ED stuff. I think if you're at a health system and you're still talking about competing against the hospital across town, you need to have a hard conversation with your team and realize that you have your blinders up and you are looking at the shortest of short-term goals, and you have got to have a plan for the future. I don't mean a plan for 6 months, 1 year from now. I mean how you will stay relevant as a health and wellness brand 5 to 10 years from now. Because if you don't start trying right now, you are absolutely going to get left behind in the conversation.
I love that as a rally cry. Two last questions before we wrap up. One is, was there any discussion around health disparities?
Almost every single panel I went to, health disparities, along with home-based care too, health disparities were part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Whether it was data or it was retail care or it was reinventing primary care, health disparities were part of the conversation. Everybody is focused on it.
Yeah, I had that same experience. And also with another thing that I think was just as large is talking about the role that employers are playing in health and stepping into that role. And that was evident even when talking, just going around the expo floor and talking to vendors and say, hey, who are you selling to? Oh, we're selling to employers. 99% of all these vendors are trying to sell to employers because that's who's stepping up. Now, what I think is very interesting, you have all these conversations about health disparities. You have all these conversations about employers kind of stepping up and bridging the gap by providing things like fertility benefits, maternity benefits, mental health benefits, as benefits to their employees. But these two things, in my opinion, are completely incongruent. You cannot solve health disparities by leaning on employers to be the ones who close gaps in access to care. All that does is really create a class of haves. You work for a big employer who's gracious enough to give you mental health benefits and talk space and maternity leave and a SNU and fertility benefits, or you don't, and you just don't get those things because you're priced out. Your insurance company doesn't want to pay for it because they don't have to. And that's awful. And we already shackle so much of our access to care through our employer, and we're shackling even more and even more. And that is, it's a real dark side to leaning on employers as the ones who can give us access to care that I didn't hear a single person talking about. The same people talking about disparities are the same people shaking the pom-poms about employers. And I don't think many people are making that connection to how the two things are completely incongruent.
Yeah, that's really interesting and really, really powerful. Just a very interesting conversation that I haven't heard a lot of discussion about either anywhere. So maybe Brennan, you need to do a whole episode on that. I think that's a really fascinating topic. But we are coming to our close, and just in summary to wrap things up, is there, if you were to say there's one thing that people should take away or just one thing that people should really be considering just about what the future looks like, what would that be?
Yeah, so care is moving home. It's moving to retail. It's moving to the workplace. It's moving to wearables. It's moving into those living moments of people's everyday lives. And that means that healthcare delivery needs to partner with atypical partners, needs to be open to new approaches. And as we said, it's all happening in this new emerging space that is upstream from legacy providers. So the trick right now, which everybody needs to be thinking about, is how not to build a separate new care delivery space, but how to build an enlarged space, how to enlarge care delivery from across the whole continuum. We need to break that down, and otherwise our health systems are going to be disconnected from where care delivery is mainly happening.
Awesome. Another great call to action for the industry. But let's just wrap up here. I think this has been an awesome discussion. We could chat all day. Gail and Brennan, thank you so much for being here. And thank you. For everybody listening, thanks so much for joining in. If there's anything you want us to cover in the future, shoot us a note at nonormal@reviveagency.com. And of course, make sure you share this show with friends, give us a review and rating on iTunes. All of that would be very much appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all. Talk to you next week.
Three,